Welcome back to the Equity Matters Podcast. It's your host, that is JV3. And the first thing I want to do is just thank you all for the support that you've offered. For folks that don't know, my father-in-law passed away unexpectedly last week, and things have been a bit all over the place. And so for those who have prayed for us, I definitely appreciate it. The homegoing celebration, it was worthwhile. I'm glad that we were able to acknowledge him and the things that he's done. It's still a bit surreal, but I'm just glad that we're able to bring family together to celebrate his life. And again, just thank you all for your support. This week on the pod, we are talking about the importance of mentorship. And I think I mentioned on a previous episode that I've really benefited from having some of the greatest minds in public health and social work really pouring into me and really being intentional about my professional development, seeking out opportunities that would benefit me, things that align with my skill set or ways that I could go about building my skill set. And I've taken that as a responsibility for myself to do the same. And so I have my own set of mentees who I talk to infrequently, but regularly. I'll do better. But it's been just great to watch them grow and develop and the opportunities that they find for themselves and say, hey, should I do this? Or is this something that I should be looking into? And because you know them and you've established rapport and you know their aspirations, you're able to help guide them in a way that's meaningful. And one of the things that comes to mind for me is in the beginning of my social work career, that didn't exist. And I didn't have people that I could bounce ideas off of. And it was a challenge because I had a very fixed view of what social work was or what it meant to do social work. And I didn't have people who looked like me who could tell me like, hey, you don't have to stay in this one space forever. You're actually building these things, these transferable skills that you can adopt and adapt in other places. And now that I'm a veteran in social work now, I'm 10 years in this year, I'm able to see that was absolutely true. And so on today's episode, we're going to hear from Dr. Lakia Cherry, Antoine Lovelle, and Haley Nelson, who have contributed to the Network for Social Work Management's Policy Fellows Program in a few different ways. And so they are the founder of the program, a mentee in the program, and a mentor in the program. So I think we're able to create a conversation around social work management, one, but also the importance of mentorship in these spaces. And so would love to introduce you all to today's guests. Whoever feels like kicking things off, let's do so.
Sure, of course. Thank you for the invitation to join you today. So I'm Lakia Cherry. I'm the CEO of the Network for Social Work Management. I've been with the network for about 8 years. Similar to you, I am a macro social worker. I'm also an executive coach and consultant, moonlighting on the side.
So I'm Antoine Lovelle. I'm the Chief Operating Officer of Collaborative Support Programs of New Jersey. I oversee the day-to-day operations of a peer-led organization that provides housing services, mental health services, substance abuse services. We have poverty initiatives to deal with economic challenges. And we just really think about individuals holistically. And really, we look at the peer movement as a civil rights movement where we ensure that people who are in communities are able to create policy from a power-up approach. I'm also an adjunct lecturer at New York University, which is my alma mater, where I teach community organizing and human behavior in the social environment. And I do so through a Black and Brown perspective or lens. That's the lens I will always use no matter where I teach. If I teach at an HBCU, I'll use that lens. If I teach at a PWI, I will also use that lens. Outside of that, you know, I'm a person who wants and needs to dismantle oppressive structures. And I think that's important. And I'll always be able to do that work no matter where I am, because that's the voice and the character that I lead with. And it's really my values, it's my personal values.
I feel that. So I guess that's me. Last but not least, I'm Haley Nelson. I'm currently the Director of Care Coordination at the Institute for Family Health. I'm actually in my last week in this role, but I've been in this role for the past 3 years and overseeing and running care coordination programs in our Bronx region. We provide services to folks with chronic conditions who need assistance with coordinating care. There's various aspects of what that looks like, and my responsibility is overseeing those programs, but also finding ways to expand and grow programs in the Bronx for within communities of color. As I mentioned, I'm in my last week in this role. I'm actually transitioning over to city government. I'll be working at the New York City Department of Health, working for an initiative called Race to Justice, essentially working to address internal race equity issues at the Department of Health. So that is what's up next for me. I also am an adjunct professor at NYU. I teach diversity, racism, oppression, and privilege. Also do so from an equity lens, which is very interesting at an institution such as NYU. And also I serve on the statewide multicultural advisory committee for the New York State Department of Health, where I serve as an advisor to the Commissioner of New York. I'm the Commissioner of Mental Health, I'm sorry, for New York State on issues related to equity and communities of color across the state. In my spare time, when I can find some, I really enjoy creating. So I sew, I like to create clothing, and I try to find ways to weave that into the work that I do on a day-to-day as well. That is me. Also, if you hear little jingles in the background, I'm dog sitting for my brother, and his dog is just all over the place. So feel free to cut any dog collars you hear jingling in the background.
I try my best not to edit too much. I like folks to know, like, you know, we're not in a studio somewhere where it's soundproof. Like, I realize, like, you all are really, really busy folks. So just glad that you all could make the time. And I'm also appreciative because we share this through line around policy and like its importance for communities of color, importance just in general for setting the stage and the standard of how we operate in various spaces. And so to find this entire program around policy and mentorship, which I thought was like a really interesting component, I wanna dive back into the beginning of like how this all came to be. So Dr. Cherry, I know this was like your brainchild. And so what led to the formation of this program and why the focus on policy?
So it's my brainchild in a way, but I don't know that I would have created the Policy Fellows program if we didn't receive outreach from someone who is interested in our organization creating something for social workers around policy. So back in 2015, the Network for Social Work Management received outreach from the executive director of the Fund for Social Policy, Education, and Practice, which was an initiative of the New York Community Trust. The New York Community Trust is well known for providing funding to social work programs. Well, some of their funders wanted to see more social work institutions investing in policy education. And around that time, our organization was promoting our next annual conference, and they learned of us and wondered what we could create that would get social work administrators and leaders excited about policy and being at the forefront of policy, as opposed to on the other side, which is where we typically are with regards to responding, not creating and advocating from the start. So we were contacted and we tried to figure out what it was that we could create, because policy wasn't necessarily our niche. But then when we thought about what was our niche, mentorship is something critical to what we do and critical to leadership development. And from there, I designed the program around mentoring social work leaders to kind of pursue their policy passions with guidance.
I'm grateful for that because I feel like so many macro social workers or just macro practitioners in general get forgotten because you're not providing a direct service. Like you're thinking about the rules of engagement for those who do direct service. And folks tend to forget like, oh, you know, I'll just do direct service for 10 years and then I'll go into a policy track. But there's people who want to start there that often get left behind.
To that point, I remember when I was in my master's program, I took a policy course, but beyond that, we didn't really dive deep into policy. Therefore, I personally didn't have much interest in it. And so when the idea was first proposed to our organization to create a program, not everyone within my board saw policy as a fit for what we do. And so when I designed the program, we didn't know that people were going to apply. And surprisingly, we had a lot of social workers from across the country applying, not only saying that they had this interest, but they needed more mentorship and support to hone this interest. And with that mentorship and support, they felt that they would be able to eventually pursue this full time, as opposed to having interest on the side and not necessarily tapping into it.
And so fast forward a bit, Haley and Antoine, how did you all get involved in the fellowship program?
Back in 2018, when I first transitioned into the role I'm currently in, I was a new director, a new manager, and I was looking for a sort of skill development. And I came across the network. I don't remember who exposed me to the network, but somehow I came across the network and they were putting on a conference. I think that year it was in Chicago, and they also had an Emerging Leaders Institute that I attended and met a bunch of really lovely individuals that I'm still in touch with today. And that was sort of my introduction to the network. And since then, I sort of became a member, remained involved in what the network had going on. And that was how I learned about the Policy Fellowship. Similarly to the reasons Lakia started this program, I got my degree in social work in 2017. And my original plan in entering my program was to become a clinician. And I took two policy classes, and that very quickly shifted my trajectory. I realized throughout my professional career, I'm a macro level thinker. Anytime I was presented with situations within specific communities I worked in, my brain was automatically thinking about what are the systems and structures at play that are impacting this community. Who is at the table that's making decisions that are impacting this community? And so that's sort of what led me in the direction of policy. And I came across this program and saw it as a great opportunity to allow me to get experience in exploring issues that are of interest to me and figure out how I could turn that into my work. And that's really where I'm at today. So I think I'm a poster child for why this program was started. But that's sort of what led me to this work and this program.
Yeah, for me, it's a funny story. So I actually applied to be a fellow as a doctoral student when I was at Fordham Graduate School of Social Service, and I didn't get in. And I was, you know, low-key devastated. I couldn't believe that I didn't get into the fellowship. You know, having, you know, a master's degree in public administration, MSW, having, you know, worked in policy at the House of Reps and New York City Council. But I brought in to the fellowship, and I always, you know, made sure I tracked it, you know, in years later. But then Lakia reached out to me and asked me to be a mentor based off the work that I had done, and asked me to work with, you know, one student. And then the following year, two students, and it was great. So that's why I did it. And for me, mentorship is important. I have a mentor. I know the valuable information I've gotten from him has really allowed me to do well in my career. And I always want to give back, because at the end of my career, I want to say, you know, this is really the achievements that I have, not wealth, not any of those pieces, but the information that I've transferred over to others. That's why I became a part of it. And that's why I brought into the system. That's why for me, even at my job as a COO, I created a mentorship program because I know how valuable that social capital is for people as they move through these unfortunate, unfair, racist, sexist systems. And for me, I always know that systems create symptoms, right? And it's so easy to see the symptoms, but I want to go into systems and change the dynamics for minoritized people.
Haley, I know you mentioned just being a macro thinker, right? Because I can totally relate. Like you see things as these larger chunks of like how you piece things together, how things interact with each other. But Antoine and Lakia, I'm curious as to what attracted you all to macro in the first place.
So for me, I think what I had finished my MSW at NYU, and I remember looking at a supervisor that I had who was not minoritized and thought, this system is really broken. I mean, how she thought about the people that we serve and how broken they were. I thought I had to do something to change up social work. And then I just thought, I have to get these people before they become social workers. And that's really what led me to actually applying for a PhD program, because I wanted to be in the classroom to really change the dynamics and the thought process for a lot of these students who are 90% female, 90% white, and their understanding of Black and brown people. And I always tell students that, listen, if I have one person that buys in, right, to this philosophy, you're going to touch thousands of people, and that changes the way that they approach Black and brown people. So I know that I have hundreds of students a year, and usually in the classroom, students never ever buy in the beginning, but I always get emails maybe years later saying, you were so right. I really understand. And how I approach issues for Black and brown people is just very different based off the voice in your classroom. And I have to think about myself as a 6'4" Black man who's teaching social work students, and really the changes that are made just by me being in the classroom alone, but also the knowledge from how I grew up, right? As a homeless, youth, in an impoverished community to a single parent, all of those lenses that I'm bringing or identities that I'm bringing to the classroom are very important for these students as they go out and hopefully do well and don't harm individuals.
I'd say my experience was somewhat similar to Antoine in that I saw other people in macro roles leading, and I questioned their leadership from afar and wondered what it would take to move into those roles and to do things differently. When I went to Columbia, I didn't necessarily have an interest in macro practice. To be honest, I didn't really know what it was. I studied advanced generalist practice and programming. So I thought at best, at some point in my career, a few years in, I might be developing and managing programs, but nothing too much further or beyond that particular capacity. I'd say my last role doing clinical work, I was working in San Bernardino, my hometown, as a clinical social worker in a parole office. And being in that role every day for 2 years and seeing all of the issues that parolees deal with and face, and the fact that there was just very limited things that I could do in my role as a clinical social worker gave me significant pause and led me to begin seeking out other opportunities where I felt that I could have a more far-reaching impact. And so from there, I eventually left that job and moved into a role that was more macro and began obtaining more skills that were along the lines of business development, marketing, sales, leadership, et cetera. And literally from there on, I knew that I could never go back, that I had to stay on this trajectory and that there was more opportunity to have greater impact, again, at a macro level than at a micro level. Both are important, but I knew that for myself, I was meant to be leading in this type of way.
You know, I never considered clinical anything. Like, it was never on the table. It was never for me. And the funny thing is, my first job outside of my MSW was in child welfare. And I was just kind of like, okay, this is a lot of, you know, person-to-person interaction. But what I was able to do in that experience was I was able to really start looking at systems as a whole. And I was able to say, like, oh, I need to make sure I understand the criminal justice system. I need to understand law enforcement. I need to understand the courts. I need to understand these community-based organizations that I'm supposed to be referring people to, just to learn that, you know, I'm faxing this stuff over. They don't even have a fax machine. And so then being in a place where it's like, oh, I need to understand what the rules are for all of these things so that I can make things as easy as possible for the families that I'm supposed to serve. Now, it didn't work that way. And I realized that within like a year and a half, it was like, okay, I need to get into more of a policy space. And now that I'm in one, I'm able to dictate in ways where I have like that lived experience. Like, I know the policies that I recommend are to benefit the people that I used to serve, as opposed to someone who's never had their hands dirty in that way. Like, there's folks who just kind of say, oh, you know, we'll do X, Y, and Z without considering like the actual consequences of those policies, because they impact people at the end of the day. They're not just words.
Yeah, for me, I see social workers, I see it differently, right? I would say if I can go back, I would probably be a labor economist. For me, I want to remove the barriers that are there, real, perceived, all of those barriers to progress. And, you know, as a social worker, we have a different lens, right? We know those barriers exist. And my role as a social worker is to help individuals remove those barriers so that they can move forward in whatever journey they choose. And that's, for me, it's, you know, the social and social work stands for social justice. So when I think about social work, it's about social justice, you know, letting people be free. It's about liberation. It's not about clinical anything. It's really about, how do we liberate people who are oppressed and marginalized and do that work? If you can't understand the history that pushed your client to your chair or your couch, you're doing harm. And that's not what we need in social work. And this is what I tell students every week. We don't need more do-gooders. I don't need that. Or, hey, I really don't need that. What I need you to do is use your privilege, open up doors for people who may not be able to see one foot in front of them. So that's how I really see social work.
And so, I agree with that. I just want to make a quick comment. Sorry, James, before we switch gears, just thinking through, you mentioned your experience in child welfare. Actually, prior to getting my degree in social work, I worked for 5 years in child welfare. And in my master's program, actually wrote a paper, and this is going to sort of tie into my policy focus. I wrote a paper on the similarities between the institution of slavery and the child welfare system. And, you know, Antoine, speaking to your point about breaking down barriers that folks are facing when they're trying to survive, thrive in this society. For me, if you really don't understand the historical context and the roots that this country has in slavery and how that touches every single system that we interact with, you know, it's hard to see how we address equity issues without understanding and addressing that foundation. So I just wanted to throw that in, that popped into my mind.
So in that same vein, Haley, let's dig into your work, right? Because you're essentially the star of the show on a Comedia Practice episode. Tell us about your policy project and tell us about your experience in the program.
I will start with, I'm going to try to weave these things together, actually, because I think there's some overlap here. So I actually was a fellow for 2 years. My first year was, I think, 2019, 2020. And what led me to focusing on economic justice, or really economic suppression, really, of Black communities, I have realized and learned that I come from what some consider the fragile middle class. I come from a legacy of folks who are descendants of enslaved Africans. friends who have, by one way or another, found their ways and succeeded despite in America. And I have a grandfather who was in the Navy. My grandmother worked for the Red Cross, and both, this is on my mother's side, but both achieved some level of economic stability for themselves. And for me growing up, while I had economic stability, I also had a little brother who had seizures, and I saw my mother struggle with paying for his medication, struggling to figure out, sometimes what food we were gonna eat. We had the Toastios and never had the Cheerios, things of that nature. And so for me, asking this question of, I come from a lineage of survivors and folks who have made a way in this country, but why do we fail to have the economic stability that I see that so many white folks have in this country? And so that is really the foundation of my policy work. I started with looking at economic suppression, beginning with the institution of slavery, and then looking at policies throughout history into present that impact economic growth for Black folks in this country. And then tying in my focus in working in healthcare currently, I then began to look at health outcomes and understanding that economic suppression has an impact on health and wellness. And then in my second year, began to really dive into some of the different cases that have been made for reparations. I think we know that folks have been fighting for reparative justice for Black Americans since slavery existed. And so started to look at some of the different cases for reparations that have been presented. And then from there, sort of developed my own thing. As I mentioned earlier, I'm a systems level thinker. I think really big. And that's something that I've struggled with in my professional career. I've had a lot of people try to shrink my ideas and tell me that it's too much or not possible and can't be done because X, Y, and Z. And so getting into my experience in the program, my first year, I had a mentor who really tried to sort of mold me into what their vision was of the work that they did. And it didn't necessarily align with where I was. And so my first mentor, I really honestly struggled with, and Lakia and I actually had conversations about this afterward. Lakia was like, girl, why did you hit me up? We could have had you worked out from the beginning. But me being the person that I am, I kind of just rolled with it. Did the work that I felt was important on my own and decided that I wanted to do a second year in the program and talk to Lakia about what I was really looking for in a mentor. And that's how I got paired with Antoine. And to Antoine's horn for a minute, Antoine is an amazing, amazing, amazing human and mentor. When I talk about, someone that, and really this is not just with my previous mentor, but I've had supervisors, I've had people in my life that tell me that I think too big. That is never a thing that Antoine once said to me. Every idea that I came with, we went to the drawing board, tried to figure out how to make it happen. Antoine tried to connect me to as many resources as possible to support the growth and development of my work. And it was really about not shrinking my ideas, but figuring out the ways that they, that kind of the rest of society can measure up. And that's sort of how my work took off. So I'm at the point now where I am existing in this space of futures thinking. I'm existing in this space of thinking outside of systems and structures that currently exist. We know that the systems and structures that exist weren't built for us to succeed. And so for us to thrive within them, have we? Yes. But it's always the exception to the rule. And so I'm in this space of imagining and dreaming up what is it that we need to truly live in an equitable society and what that will look like for Black Americans. So I really am focused on whether or not we receive reparations in the form of a check. What does it mean to sustain that as a people? What does it mean to truly achieve equity for Black folks? And there's a lot of interesting things that are sort of happening all over the place, locally, federally. New York City just declared racism as a public health crisis. So I think there's room in in legislation and in policy to really start to try to address some of these issues. But the reality is, again, systemic racism is at its core. And so until we really work to address racism as the true core of the issue, we're still going to see a lot of the inequities that exist. And that's kind of the space I'm living in. I try to bring that equity lens into my current role. I'm excited to see the ways that I can bring this in to the Department of Health as well. So I think I went all over the place there, but that is sort of my policy work and where I'm at currently.
And I'm glad that you did go all those places, because I think it helps to shape and frame the way that you position yourself in the work and the way you're going to strategize and approach it, right? Like, it's not just one issue. We're talking about intersectional issues. We're talking about positionality in different facets, and being able to articulate that. And to me, like, I'm a big fan of health and all policies, though I've never seen it done well. Like, I believe that being able to situate myself in public health, but then go to transportation, or then go to housing, or then go to parks and recreation, like, being able to frame, like, this is all our issue, right? Like, it's not just mine. Like, you're just as much a public health department as I am. And so being able to see that and articulate it, like, I think that's a huge thing. And people, I think, you know, we see issues as one-sided or unidimensional. And that's not the case, because the people that don't just live in one space. Like, we got to address all of these things.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. It really is not a one-sided or a one-dimensional issue. You know, healthcare is economic justice. It is environmental justice. It is criminal justice. It's all of those things. All of these systems and areas have an impact on health. You know, if you don't have access to transportation to get to a medical appointment, how are you able to take care of your health? If you don't have access to healthy food options, how are you going to take care of your health? And all of those things really go back to economic stability and economic issues. So for me, economic stability is at the core of all of it.
And so, Antoine, being Haley's mentor, could you speak to the same thing as far as like the mentoring piece and how that was a benefit for you?
Yeah, I have to say that I'm a fan of Haley, right? I would say Haley is an investment in my community, and she'll always be a part of my tribe. We have the same values. I think we have the same mission in this work. And we'll always be together in some way. And working with her was really just listening to her, you know, as a social worker, is about active listening. Right? I really was just there to facilitate her needs, right, as a social worker, and really just link her to, you know, resources that she needed. I extended my social capital to Haley. And that's what she will do for someone in the future. And that's really, when I think about a tribe, we have to invest in our tribe members so that we can grow and do this great work. And that's really what I did. I mean, Haley told me what she needed. And I said, maybe you should do this. Maybe you should try this. She came back in the following week and she said, this is what I accomplished. What do you think I should do next? And we just pieced it together. We looked at this puzzle and we started piecing it together, and she did all the work. As you can tell, she's an amazing person. She's brilliant. She understands how to think critically and how to think about the big picture. And she did that on her own. I would say I really didn't do much. Haley did all the work. She absolutely did all the work. I can't sit here and take, you know, credit for, you know, her accomplishments, her new role, because I didn't do that. What I was there to do was to cheer her on and to tell her, listen, what you've been told maybe in the past is not true, and that you are valuable, and that your voice is important in this world. Go kick some doors down. And I know that someday you're gonna lead an organization with your great voice and make changes that are needed. And I know that's to be true. So I would like to say I did something magical, but I don't have a wand. Haley did it all, right? She did it all.
I feel like I'm blushing over here.
For me, this work is important. Right, more so than any day job that I will have. Investing in my own people is something that I will always do no matter what. And that's what the mentorship program is for me. It's investing in my own. And Black and brown people who are social workers, change agents, people who want to kick down doors, people who want to dismantle these oppressive structures. They're my tribe, right? And I want to make sure I invest in them, right? What I put in myself, I want to put more into them, right? Because we're going to do this work. We are going to make these changes. At the end of my life, right, I want to be able to say what I did and how I did it. And how I did it, one part of it is going to be through mentorship, right? That's how your legacy will always last. And I want to make sure that that legacy is there long after I'm gone.
I was just thinking about the importance of mentorship, especially for communities of color, especially for folks who are interested in policy and systems level issues. These spaces are so overwhelmingly white. And oftentimes, at least in my experience, I haven't found the level of support that I've needed in professional spaces, whether it be addressing policy issues or working within social services. There's just a lack of support for folks of color in these spaces. And so having folks like Antoine, and eventually I hope to get to that same space to be able to just mentor and lift folks up that really want to do this work. The reality is, we are magic and we are powerful. And the things that systemic racism and white supremacy will do to try to minimize and limit that, we will always rise above. And so I think for me, that is a reason why mentorship is so important.
Going back to the foundation of the program, Dr. Cherry, how did you know to include that mentoring piece? Like, I know you got feedback from members of the network, but the way that you were able to make it like the heart of the program, like the policy is important, the policy project is important, but ensuring those authentic relationships is what sustains the project, I feel.
Well, when I first came into my role as CEO of the network, one of the things I thought about a lot as I was developing programming was, what do I personally want and need? What do I lack? And I used my own experience as a social worker navigating the professional world to figure out what I wanted to create or make available to other social workers within our audience. And so I've had mentors throughout my life, but I didn't necessarily have social work mentors when I first graduated from my master's program and as I was beginning my career. And so when funding was made available to start a policy program, again, I mentioned that I wasn't sure whether the audience was there with the interest, but if there was an audience there, I knew that anyone and everyone could benefit from additional support from someone a little bit more seasoned and experienced with the respective areas such as policy. And so I utilized my own social capital a lot with developing this program. Antoine mentioned that he had previously applied for the program. I don't remember that in the early days. And even more recently, we've received a ton of applications, which I personally don't review, but I'm constantly paying attention to social workers in the field who are doing innovative, important things. And I remember, for example, seeing him and hearing about his work. So I knew from my observations that he would be a great mentor. And so in the early days, and again, more recently, a lot of the mentors are people that I know personally through the network. I have been able to observe and see them firsthand to know whether or not they would be a good mentor or whether or not I would actually want them to mentor me. So I use that a lot of the time, but also the reality is there's not a lot of social workers out there doing policy work who are visible. So when we did promote this program, there weren't a lot of people raising their hand to be policy mentors, but there were a lot of people raising their hands to be policy fellows. And so Haley, now that she's been through the program twice, to me, she's skilled enough to begin mentoring someone else and to begin a pipeline of policy mentors, because it's severely lacking, but history has shown it's definitely needed.
I'd be curious to hear what advice you all have for those who are interested in policy work, but just aren't quite sure how to step into it.
I would say seek out opportunities such as the Policy Fellows Program offered through the Network for Social Work Management. I think programs like this are important for folks who are interested but not sure how to, what next steps to take. As we've sort of been talking about all evening, oftentimes the support of a mentor can help you get to that space or have a better understanding of how you want to move into the future. And I'd also say, I think oftentimes the narrative is you need to seek higher education, you need to get a doctoral degree, you need to get your law degree or some other type of degree in order to enter into the world of policy, and that could not be more false. Policy is everywhere we look. Everything we do is impacted by policy. So if there's an interest or an area, try to find ways that you can get involved in conversations, in community boards, in drafting policy briefs or recommendations. And that is all ways to market yourself to enter into a policy space. So I'd say seek support and seek resources, and also find ways to hone in on areas of interest that you have, and that you don't need to continue to pay for these degrees to enter into a policy space.
Yeah, I like to see social workers understand political science, sociology, economics, history, all those pieces so that they can really do the work and really analyze what's going on. I think it's important. Also, I think the other piece is find someone who's currently running that race, who's in that lane. Reach out to them, ask them questions. Can you have coffee with me? I think when I was working with Haley, I asked her to reach out to the CEO of United Way of New York City. Just have coffee, and the person actually emailed her back, right? Those kind of things. Right, have these conversations. What do you think I should do? How can I do it? And it may not look the same way that they did, but you want to keep going out there and getting information from people. I would say you need more than one mentor, right? Because remember, I have multiple identities, and maybe one mentor can't understand a number of identities that I have. So I'm always going to seek out people who may understand that lived experience that may be an issue at that time. So I would say have more than one mentor because that's important. I would say do a lot of things, right? Continue your education. And it doesn't have to be, like Haley said, in a college or university. Education could be traveling. It could be interacting among tribes that may be different than yours and maybe getting support from your current tribe. There's a number of things that you have to do, right, to do this work in terms of policy.
And I agree with everything that was said. Multiple mentors is extremely important. Unfortunately, many people don't even know how to go about securing a mentor. So there's some work there to be done. Informational interviews. If you have an interest in a particular area, as Antoine was mentioning, LinkedIn has people from throughout the world, the place that they work, the title. You can easily just contact them and ask for a virtual meeting in today's world, essentially, to learn more about what they do, the skills that are required, but also a lot of times who you know is what gets you in the door, not what you know. So while you should be reading and researching, the networking piece is even more crucial. One of the things that I discovered with this Policy Fellows program is there's not enough emphasis being put not only on macro social work and leadership and social work education, there's simply not enough being done as it pertains to policy too. And so when we do graduate, unless you already knew that you were interested in pursuing a policy career, many of us go out into the field, micro or macro, and we lose a lot of the skills or just simply the knowledge that we gained in our programs around policy. So when it comes time to even voting or advocating for a cause, we don't even know the process or what to do. And so I think we really need to go back to the basics beyond our master's programs of how to be involved in government, even at the local level, what that looks like, what the process is, because I mean, I'm just going to put myself out there. I would have to Google it in order to know what to do. And I think that's the situation for most people. Therefore, they don't do it. And so for you, James, or you, Haley, or Antoine, I think that's a space where we can get more people involved by, again, going back to the basics and teaching people what actually you need to do to get involved.
I'll tell a very brief story because you mentioned LinkedIn. So a few years back, I was watching a YouTube video with Michael McAfee, who's the CEO of PolicyLink, and he was doing a TED Talk. And I was just so impressed by just the fact that there was this Black man wearing a turtleneck, telling the truth, right? Just like telling the honest to God truth about white supremacy, about racism, about philanthropy, like all of the things that I was interested in. And so I, being the person I am, found him on LinkedIn and I just sent him a note like, hey, you know, I just watched this video with you in it. I loved it. Just know that you've got a fan in Michigan who's just like, one day I want to be like that. And I promise you, it was like less than an hour later, he responded back. It was like, hey, let's get 15 minutes on the call. Right. And I was just like so surprised because you think about these people who are ridiculously busy like you all, who have a thousand things that they need to accomplish in any given day, but are willing to take the time to just sit and talk and say, hey, you know, you can do this and this is the path that you might want to take. These are some of the things that you might not want to do just based on the lessons that I've learned along the way. And I've been able to create like my own personal, like I call them my board of directors or my brain trust, like my own group of folks that I know I can go to and say, hey, I have this particular issue. What should I do? Like I've got, and to your point, Antoine, people who meet the different dimensions of me. So I've got like the Detroit hustler mentors, like, hey, we got to get this the business development. We got to make these things happen. I've got the people who are more chill, who are just like, hey, make sure you're taking care of yourself while you're trying to do all these things. Go take a break, go sit down somewhere. And I've also just got people who just want to hear how I'm doing, right? Like being Black and navigating, you know, bureaucracy and just the challenges that come with everything, right? And being able to have those people around you who nurture you, who pour into you, who speak life into you, like that's what it's about. And I hope that one day I'm able to do that in the same way for somebody else who's up and coming.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think of what my mentor always says, there are 24 hours in a day. And if I can't give you one, that's my problem, not yours. And that's what I always think about, right? That I can find an hour, 30 minutes in my day, right? If I can't prioritize you, then there's an issue with how I think about my day and how I, you know, show up in the world. So for me, if someone reaches out to me, I'm going to find time for them, right? If it's 5-10 minutes, I would try to be the person that I've needed throughout my career that I've maybe never had access to. So if you reach out to me, I'm going to find the time, right? I need people to be progressive because it's not about you or I. Right? It's about the people that we serve. And if it takes me giving you information, right, to move people forward, let's do this work, right? Because I really do see this as a tribe. I may not see you every day, but if we're all moving in the same direction, we all have the same mission, we are a family.
Which is why, Antoine, you're my new mentor.
We will support each other.
I love it. Y'all making it work here live, you know, in real time. So let us know about the future of this work. I mean, we all have different parts of this policy fellowship. Where do we all go from here?
When I have these conversations, I would say, here's something I would love to be able to do. I would love to be able to work for Haley one day. I know that sounds strange, but I would love to be able to operationalize her vision and her mission one day, because I really believe in her that much. And I don't know if I've ever told her that, but I would love to be able to support you in your growth as an executive and do this really great work, because I know that you can do it. And I think anybody listening to this podcast would know that You have it. You are going to be at the top one day. And I can't wait to see that. So for me, it's always about supporting the mission. I take myself out of it. I don't need to be at the top. I need to be able to do this work and be an ally to people who can push things forward. And I would love to be able to do that one day. And for some reason, I think it's going to happen.
I really appreciate that. I don't know what to say, but thank you. And I already told you before, we are together in this work ongoing. So, I would love to partner with you along the way, whatever that journey looks like for both of us. Because I'd say the same about you as well.
Aw, see, this is why we do this work. So funding has ended for the Policy Fellows Program. The New York Community Trust has shifted their priorities. So while we have relied upon them for funding the program in past years, our organization now has to identify new funders or a new method of funding the program. In the meantime, Antoine has graciously volunteered to serve as the network's first resident mentor, which means he is volunteering his time over the next 6 months to mentor via group mentoring a cohort of 3 to 5 people from throughout the country. And so it won't necessarily be focused entirely on policy, but it will be a good opportunity for people to benefit from Antoine's leadership and mentorship and receive support in a collective group setting. So that is something that I'm getting ready to advertise and promote within the next few weeks. And I'm hoping that some of the network's previous mentors will also come on board and serve the way Antoine is serving within the next year.
That's amazing. I'm looking forward to seeing more about that, Lakia, and whoever those mentees are definitely in for a treat and gonna be set up for success. So that's lovely. I'm sorry to hear that the funding is ending though, and I hope that the ways the fellowship program sort of reinvents itself still offers this opportunity to folks out there. For myself, as I mentioned earlier, I'm in a state of career transition currently. I'm also working on developing a platform to continue my sustainable reparations work. I have a larger vision to incorporate this work with my interest and passion for creating fashion, sewing. So I have a bunch of ideas that I'm just brewing around at the moment. And so longer term, hoping to launch that in the next couple of years, maybe shorter than that. That's where I'm at. I am adjusting in career and developing what's next in the sustainable reparations journey.
I want to be a mentee. I don't want to be a mentor. I want to come learn from Antoine.
Looks like you and I will be in that program, James.
Yeah.
Honestly, we're a tribe and we learn from each other. I think nobody can do it alone, right? I think we all learn from each other. There'll be a day when I'm struggling and I'm exhausted and I will be able to reach out to my tribe member and to find that energy from you. And I think that's the only way that we can do it, right? It's always about this collectivism and going back to what Beyonce says, let's get into formation. And that's the only way that we can move forward is by being in formation.
I think you are the first Beyonce reference on the podcast. So congratulations to you.
I love it.
Well, you always got to throw her in there. You got to throw her in there. But really, that's a community organizing song. If you really think about it, it's really about thinking about Black and Brown people and how if we organize well, right, even using an intersectional lens, right, we can do well. And I think we have to do that, right? I can't think about my privileges, right, or my identities alone and not extend myself to others in my community. It just doesn't work that way. I don't support individualism. It doesn't work, right? Not for this community, it doesn't work, right? Whatever resources I have to be able to extend my arm to others so that they can do the work that they need. And it may not be the work that you know, I'm doing right now, but it's whatever lane they're actually operating in right now, right, that they can run in, that's what I need to do. So I think let's do it together. I cannot do it alone. I would love to say, hey, you know, I'm that strong, but I'm not, right? These arms, they get tired. This brain, it dulls out. And I always reach out to my community members to help me with this, right? I have my tribe, right? If it's that self-care that I need to walk in the park or to go jogging, I reach out to my tribe members to do this work, because we have to think about the eight dimensions of wellness, right? Intellectual, physical, emotional, spiritual. And we need our tribe members to help us support, right, those pieces of us. So
even as we prepare to close, I realize that you all have just a wealth of expertise and experience, just knowledge in general. How do people keep up with you, with your work, other ventures that you may have going on?
So for me, I'm active on social media. I really see that as social capital, interacting with people who are doing the same work. So people can always contact me there. I believe I'll always be Googleable, right? So people can always just, you know, Google my name, find me wherever I am. But no matter where I am, I'm going to still be doing the same type of work, right? Is being a very humble servant, washing the people feet who I serve as a humble servant. And always just thinking about how to allow everyone to the door. Right? I never will ever want to be alone in that room. For me, it's always allowing others in so that we can do this work together. And that's another part of wellness. So they can always find me those ways. And they'll probably find me in a classroom somewhere, making sure that, you know, these students and future leaders and practitioners do the proper work for the people that they serve. So I'll be around.
I love that. I'm also really active on social media. So you can find me across all the platforms, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, etc. If you're interested in learning more about the Network for Social Work Management, our programming, as well as the mentorship program with Antoine that I just mentioned, you can go to socialworkmanager.org. If you're interested in learning more about myself and my work independent of the network, you can go to my website, lakiacherry.com, to learn about my executive coaching and consulting services.
I too am available on most social media platforms. I'd say LinkedIn is probably the best way to find me, but I'm also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I would like to say that I'm active on social media, but I also really like to just shut it off sometimes. And that's part of my self-care, taking a mental break from it all. But I am available on those platforms and would love to connect with anyone out there that would like to.
I took a moment to Google myself after Antoine said that he's Googleable. And I'm actually surprised that there's things that pop up about me that I gotta go scrub the internet just to make sure everything's cool though. There's some things that I might not want out in the world just yet. But aside from all that, I'm grateful for you all for taking the time. And I know even in putting this outline together, it seemed like there was a heavy focus on the policy side of things, but to me, what I really wanted to get at was the mentorship and the relationship that we built just through this work. I mean, the policy fellowship was definitely the vehicle, but being able to say like, hey, I've created a community of people who are linked because of policy efforts or linked because of social justice or addressing racial equity, like all of those things, the policy piece is cool, right? But it's really the relationships that have grown because of that. And the fact that we're all about to be Antoine's mentee. So, I mean, it's just really, really, I don't even have a good adjective for it. Like, I'm just grateful for the work that you all do and just glad that we could have this moment to just talk about it.
And thank you, James, for this opportunity. This was lovely. Good to see all of y'all in one space. Thanks for bringing us all together.
So, of course, I want to start things off with just thanking our guests for joining us today. I think in many ways, as we describe what it means to be a social worker. One is just this understanding that policy, one, affects individuals and families and communities, but you have to also ensure that those policies don't have unintended consequences. And for you to see those things, it's good to have someone who's been in that space, someone who's already encountered these things, who can help to guide you as you're navigating through policy development or program management. Because there's certain challenges and barriers that you're going to encounter, and you might even feel like giving up, right? You feel like that is the end, and you can't do that. And so when you have people in your corner who are cheering for you, who are giving you the keys along the way, you gotta take heed to that. I want to give a shout out really quickly to my mentors. I'm not going to do name drops just because that's not like me. But there are folks who are in the policy space, who are in the nonprofit space, podcasters, people that I admire. I tell you this all the time. Just thank you for continually believing in me and the things that I do, reassuring me when I'm not totally sold on myself or when I feel like I'm, you know, wearing an imposter's mask. Thank you for just pouring into me. A few very quick updates. We're going to start things off on the Brothers in Social Work Collective tip. So we've been busy. So one, shout out to Gary Taylor and Christopher Scott, who have made themselves available to me to just really think about what it means to be Black in social work spaces. How do we go about navigating those spaces? How do organizations become more inclusive to more diverse candidates applying for positions and roles? And so we've got a few opportunities coming up with a few different universities who want to hear us speak. As we get those on the calendar, be on the lookout for updates on that. If your university wants to hear us, if they have something that needs facilitation, needs assessment and analysis, holler at us. That's what we're here for. We're excited to pour into these universities and in many ways talk about things that we didn't have a chance to talk about when we were paying to go there. And so that's part one. Brothers in Social Work Collective is live. We're busy. Holler at us. Let's get on the calendar. If you want us to come to your university, reach out. I've got the link in our podcast description. Second, Cummings Graduate Institute. For folks who are interested in professional development opportunities, we've got two trainings that are now live. The first being Understanding and Mitigating Implicit Bias and Authentic Community Relationships from Outreach to Engagement. Two skills that I think are necessary for the social work toolkit. But if you're not a social worker, I'd also advise that you look into it. $20, folks. $20 is a mild investment at best for your own professional development, but I think it's worthwhile. If you've never seen me present, I think this is a good way to get an introduction of the way that I flow outside of the microphone. That was a double entendre if you're not hip. In addition to the CGI efforts, my first publication I think will be live next week. So when that comes out, I'll make sure to get a link out to folks. We're talking about social determinants of health and how various spaces, particularly in the west side of the state of Michigan, where there's poverty, where there's racism or historical racism, have disenfranchised and further marginalized groups. And so I'm really excited to have wrapped up this project. The first time that I'll see myself in a citation, I think I'm a little emotional about it because it's kind of cool. I have another publication that I'm working on that should be done sometime this summer. I'm going to keep things under wraps for that, but in due time. And also, as always, please follow us on social media. I think we're almost at 1,600 followers on Instagram, which is really cool. Follow us. That's at Equity Matters Podcast. It is at Equity Matters PC on Instagram, and like us on Facebook. That's Equity Matters Podcast as well. Sign up for the listserv. You know, if you don't happen to listen to all of the episodes, you'll stay up to date with when new episodes come out, when trainings are available, all the things that I talk about here, you can find there as well. Also, I mentioned this last time, I've got a website, y'all, a landing page. Holler at me there if you're interested in some consulting or technical assistance. you want to pick my brain, holler at me on there. Also linked in the bio. So until next time, folks, one, find yourself a mentor or a mentee, someone who can pour into you or you can pour into them. Two, the pandemic's not over despite what people may think. Rules may be rolling back and loosening up. The restrictions mean nothing. Just be mindful, make good decisions. And three, equity matters.